Patrick Gregg, welcome back to The Signal.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks for having us.
So, GeoPoe, described as a literary geocaching adventure. What exactly is a geocaching literary adventure?
Indeed, it was an adventure. 2 years ago, when I was working on my MFA at the University of Tampa, we were sort of experimenting with different platforms to deliver literature. And one of the ideas that Jeff Parker, the director of the program at the time, had was, you know, what if we combined storytelling with geocaching, which was something he was very much into, where people use GPS coordinates to scavenger hunt, essentially. So we experimented with that there in Tampa, and then I brought the idea up here to Baltimore for a program in October. And when you think October in literature in Baltimore, you automatically think about Edgar Allan Poe. So I enlisted 13 writers in the city to write short stories inspired by the death of Poe or somehow written in a Poe-esque manner. And then what we did was hid them around the city in these blue canisters that had a rope tied to it so you could hide it almost anywhere. And the idea was then, you know, we posted on Twitter and Facebook clues to go about finding these short stories. And the idea was for people to find them, open the cache, read the story. Each cache had a little pencil in it, like a little golf pencil, where you'd write your comments on the back and maybe your email address, and then re-fold the story back up and re-hide it for the next lucky finder. It's not quite the way it panned out.
I was going to say, it sounds like a good idea, but then all of a sudden you think of all the things that could possibly go wrong. And what could possibly go wrong with
Well,
that?
Hiding the stories in these blue canisters in plain sight was not a good idea. They were sort of plastic, hard plastic, weatherproof, and the perfect size to keep a pack of cigarettes dry. And sure enough, these canisters in which the stories were hidden, they were purloined and then repurposed on the streets of Baltimore. So most of the stories were either hidden way too well, and we weren't able to give sufficient enough clues for them to be found, and may sure enough be there to this very day. They may be there 100 years from now. Or they were very quickly absconded with and used to the benefit of whatever nefarious purposes on the streets
of
Baltimore.
I like to think that the people who took the canisters actually read the stories before they repurposed them.
I would like to think that, too. Strangely enough, the two canisters that were hidden most in plain sight that were undisturbed, one was hidden at an independent bookstore and the other at the public library. Hmm. So what does that tell you? And the one that got the most action was hidden in Leakin Park. And I even commented to the writer of that story at the time. It's like, you know, it's a great idea. I like the idea behind your wanting to hide it there. But who's going to find that?
And right.
Who is going to be wandering around looking for such things in Leakin Park?
And those comments were a story unto themselves.
So he had comments on the back of the story. And the people who discovered his story in Leakin Park mistook his fiction for a desperate man's cry for help.
Wow.
And actually wrote words of encouragement and stay strong, Fitz. I don't know who you are, Fitz, but you know, the sun will shine tomorrow. There's always, you know, when the day is darkest, you know, the sun will break through. So he has hence written a poem based on the responses and the feedback that his story got and that was hidden in Leakin Park.
Wow. I mean, so it really wasn't a complete failure. You just got different results than you were expecting.
Right, exactly. Well, thank you for putting it that way, Lisa.
But some of the stories did, you were able to give clues and some were found and worked to a certain extent, I would imagine.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, I sort of want to also give credit to the Baltimore Office of Promotion and the Arts because it was through a small grant from their Free Fall Baltimore project that happens every October that made this possible. But City Lit, most of our programming is free anyway. So what do you do? You can't offer free tickets when most of what you present to the public is free to begin with. So for the past several years, City Lit's always sort of used this opportunity in the month of October to experiment with something new. So this is probably the most ambitious experiment that we've conducted. So what happened was, as part of the plan, at the end of the month of searching and hunting and finding, we all went to retrieve the canisters that we hid, and those who found them brought them back. And then we had this great reading at Westminster Hall adjacent to Poe's gravesite. And that reading was one of the most fun, one of the most literary, solid, diverse, engaging, entertaining programs that City Lit's put on.
It was really well attended. And I agree, engaging was the word I was going to use too, and engaged. Everybody was engaged. There was an enthusiasm.
And based on that, energy and enthusiasm is what kind of gave me the idea about, boy, it'd be a shame if these stories just ended here at the end of October. And my friend Pat and Davida, who were involved in the project to begin with and have the great Small Honey in Your Baltimore zine, probably just a few days later, I turned to them and said, hey, what do you think about doing a special zine version of these stories to really give them an audience that they deserve and a life long beyond the project itself?
And so now we have this zine, this collection of all the writing. And I would think that finding your 14 writers for this particular project was probably a really fun process, because I think of Edgar Allan Poe and I remember first discovering him as a kid, and people find their way to Poe in a lot of different ways. And maybe you have this lifelong relationship with him. And I imagine most writers and the people that you approached about this had something to connect them to Edgar Allan Poe and were probably delighted to be asked.
That's true. But I also kind of deliberately identified writers who didn't normally write in this short form or didn't write prose at all. And I think, trying to write a story that's nothing more than, 300 words or so, that's a super challenge.
Yeah.
So the book, the zine contains writing from first-time writers to people who primarily identify as poets, also to... We have a short play that's in the collection. So really people took the opportunity to have fun with the creative process as well.
In some cases, too, writers that are maybe accustomed to writing nonfiction and aren't accustomed to making something up.
Right.
And I think the collection includes both natives and Baltimore transplants. So whether you're born here or live and create here now, everyone feels an indebtedness and an appreciation for Poe and sometimes in a desire to emulate Poe. If not in real life,
at least that seems a bit dangerous.
It seems a bit dangerous.
It is Baltimore, though.
Well, my story in particular, sort of Poe's death, which happens in October, which is sort of also the inspiration behind the whole project, and then now the zine. His death is the causes of his death are essentially still mysterious and unknown. There's a lot of conjecture and a lot of theories.
That's one of the things that I would say too. Yeah. Really. Gave people a broad scope with which to run, because there is sort of that ambiguity in like the circumstances of his death and whatnot that gives you a lot of, it's like the Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Nazis and the occult. There's just enough fact in there to give it credence, but there's enough conjecture to let people run wild.
Few writers have a life to match the style of writing. I mean, he's just such a perfect, tragic literary figure. It's kind of amazing.
And I think another thing, too, and this was brought up at the event back in October, is that there is also a variety to Poe's writing. I mean, he's often simply pigeonholed as horror and macabre, but, he wrote plenty of nonfiction things, and, he's basically the father of the modern detective story.
Yeah, and his poetry also had range, too. And a lot of people do peg him as the black-clad master of the macabre. And it's well-deserved, but also his range.
Not necessarily the entire picture either.
Mm-hmm. So. There's always, there's a mystery for every, and everyone can have their own Poe, too. Everyone can have the Poe that they like to think about and like to imagine.
And his fame knows no bounds. Certainly no, by country or anything like that. Because, I work downtown not too far from Poe's grave, and walk by there a lot, and all year long you see people from all over the world coming there and stopping and leaving little tokens and taking selfies with their selfie sticks.
Wow. Yeah. It takes on a larger life. His writing, what we know, what he did, where he lived, and we'll always claim him. He is of Baltimore. I believe we can say today once and for all that Poe belongs to Baltimore.
Well, as I noted in the introduction, every city from Richmond to New England can pretty much claim a small, nondescript house in a crummy part of town that says Poe slept here, but only one city can say it killed him.
Well, maybe it would be nice to hear a sample from the collection. Patrick, maybe you'd like to read your story from the collection.
Okay. Resurrection. Only Reynolds' notoriously short temper rivaled his propensity for drink, and he often conspired with both in the filthy pubs and brothels of the Baltimore waterfront. There, the budding surgeon could also comfortably indulge his darkest whims without risk of crossing paths with his genteel peers from the College of Medicine. Indeed, the local gendarme only stood to profit from his presence. That bastard's intellect was what had most startled Reynolds. That he had somehow known Reynolds' name, knew of his family. But how? Was this another purebred fox in a common henhouse? No. The clothes were too shabby, the face too world-worn to pass for that of a gentleman like himself. So who was this drunk at the end of the bar who called out Reynolds for who he was, for what he was, amidst the company of burly longshoremen and nameless whores whose sudden absence would never make the papers? They all seemed to know this man, though Reynolds was certain that he had never seen the stranger before. Not one to take unnecessary chances, Reynolds slipped his hand into his breast pocket and produced the small vial he had refilled at the dispensary earlier that evening, and just as furtively swept it over the glass of the man apparently known to these fawning whores as Hermy. Reynolds had never heard of this writer, Poe, when the papers reported his death a week later, though he knew him at once by the accompanying illustration, the same face now staring back at him from the dissection table. The proximity of Westminster Burying Ground, 2 blocks away, had its advantages for an ambitious anatomist. Congestion of the brain was listed as the cause of death, which really meant that they had no idea of the cause of death. That was the beauty of the stuff, Reynolds thought. Prior to his death, this man, Poe, Hermy, whatever, had reportedly muttered the name Reynolds, which gave the young surgeon momentary pause. No matter, though. After all, who would ever attach his good family name to the delirious ramblings of a destitute writer? Reynolds briefly snickered to himself as he laid out his surgical kit, thinking, no one in this town reads anyway.
Patrick Tandy, reading his story Resurrection from G.O. Poe, short stories inspired by the life and death of Edgar Allan Poe. Before the story, I spoke with Tandy and Greg Wilhelm of the City Lit Project. The G.O. Poe Posse, which includes the Signal's own Aaron Henkin, will be celebrating the zine's publication with a special reading on Thursday, March 12th at 7 p.m. at Atomic Books in Hamden. Copies of G.O. Poe will be available at Atomic, and you can also order them online at 8stonepress.com. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.